You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this.
Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Tina Palmgren. Tina and I actually met a couple years ago through an online networking group. So the story she shares with us today is about how she herself worked through a period of what I'll call intense grief after the end of a relationship. At least that's how the story starts. As we go through the conversation, Tina shares that she realized that the grief she was experiencing in her 30s has a connection to an experience she went through as a young child, as a baby, really. The connection is pretty direct. She's noticed that right away. But it took actually another decade for her to realize that there was some deep mindset stuff that she was holding on to that tied these two events together, and it was keeping her stuck. Tina shares with us the difference, in her opinion, between living and thriving and how she made that shift. So, are you ready? I think you are. I think pretty sure you are. All right, let's do it. Tina Palmgren, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
Absolutely.
All right, me too. All right, so I start all of my conversations with my guests asking people where they call home. So tell us where you are.
Well, I still call home Upper Michigan, although I'm in Stevens Point, Wisconsin now.
Yeah, I know. Before we hit record, you confused me because you referred to somebody in the Upper Peninsula. And I said, wait a minute, that's Michigan. And you realized, but I was like, I knew because you and I know each other a little bit that you're in Wisconsin. So there we go. So in a second, we'll get to the topic of the day, which is not my geographic confusion with the part of the world known as the UP. But what is a compliment or kind words that you have given somebody? It can be something small, could be earlier today.
Well, I know it was somebody that did something different with their hair, and I just really liked it. I know it was curly, and I don't remember what it was, but I liked how they redid their hairstyle, and it was just something different that usually it's up in a ponytail or whatever, and it just looked really great down.
Very good. So you're just doling out compliments so often, you're not even keeping track. I love to hear that. Yes, I do.
I know.
I love to hear it. All right. The topic of the day is we're going to talk about a time when you were working through like a particularly dark time in your life after a sudden relationship change is what I'm going to start the conversation with. And then we'll walk through this, right? So are you ready to talk about that today?
Yes.
All right. Very good. So you and I have actually known each other for a couple years online. What's interesting is that I had no idea about this part of the story, this time of your life. And the only reason I mentioned that is just as a nod that that's the reality of like being a human being. We often know people, but we don't know whole chunks of their story. So before we get to the tough stuff in this conversation, I want to back up and talk about maybe some of the happy memories or the good stuff that came before the end. So you were married. How long were you married? How long was the marriage?
Just over 4 years and a month and a half.
All right. So 4 years of marriage. And the beginning of the story that we're talking about, which is the dark time, is that your husband passes away. So I want to just double check the details to make sure that we're all understanding what was going on. You mentioned in the intake form that he has kids, and that's pretty specific wording. So am I to understand that these were stepkids? These are not your kids?
Correct. They are my stepchildren.
All right. So you were married, you had some stepkids. And so the story that we're sharing today is not actually about directly about your husband or about the kids. But in order to understand some of the change that you experienced, I did want to talk a little bit about the life that you guys had together. Mm-hmm. So how old were the kids during the marriage roughly? And tell us a little bit about how much time you guys were spending together. Were you living with the kids full time? Were they going back and forth between houses? Were you all getting along? What was that like before?
Yeah, so they were about 6 and 9 when I met my husband. And so they were around 10 and 13, 11 and 14, somewhere in there when he passed away. We had them every other weekend and we would take them on trips, but we did have to go back to court because the ex-wife was not letting him see the kids.
Okay.
So there was some issues with that and just different things, but no, the kids and I got along very well. We did not, he could not even talk to his ex-wife hardly. They could talk a little bit, but not, they didn't have a good relationship.
Pretty
Let's,
high conflict relationship
yes.
then. All right. But you were seeing them and they were a part of your life, but it wasn't like a problem.
Exactly. I mean, so the younger one even called me mom a few times. I'm sure it was a slip, but you know, we all got along. We were very close, and they
That is it.
confided in me. Yeah.
That is a funny feeling when somebody young, they do that. They'll even do that with teachers and babysitters and stuff like that, little kids. They'll do that. But with the step-parent relationship, sometimes it can feel a little tenuous, a little stressful. It's like, oh my gosh, what does this mean? Does it mean anything? Like, do we need to have a conversation? But sometimes it's just an accident. You're the long-haired adult near me who can get me a juice box, you
Yeah,
know?
exactly.
All right. So I have some questions about the experience of your husband's passing. Was it a sudden event, or was this something where he was sick and you knew it was coming?
It was sudden. He had a heart attack.
All right.
They didn't know why he had a heart attack. This was on a Thursday. And on Friday, we decided he'd stay in the hospital over the weekend and they would do an angio on Monday. And so Sunday night, we got a call that they had taken him off the blood thinners and he was having another heart attack. So they were rushing him to do an emergency angio. And what happened is he had a tear on his heart, on the artery in his heart, which his fed over 50% of his heart, which is abnormal. Normally, there's three that do that. It was fine, but because it was tore, it had a tear. It was trying to clot
Okay.
to heal itself, right? So that's what caused the heart attack. So they gave him TPA, which is a clot dissolving medication, and he hemorrhaged to his brain. And it went downhill from there. So we don't
Okay.
need to get into the rest of the details, but he died from the hemorrhage. He was pretty much in a coma for the last 4 days of his life
Aye, that's
before
very
I
hard.
shut him off. Yeah.
That's very, very hard. So the heart attack, that was a sudden event, and very, very stressful. And then a couple days in the hospital, thinking that you're going to have therapeutic treatment, he's going to come out on the other side of an angio treatment. Unfortunately, it doesn't work out. And over a 5-day period, you go from being in a pretty new marriage with stepkids to being widowed.
Exactly.
And it sounds like that was an emotional roller coaster of time in the hospital. Is
Yeah.
ups and downs, ups and downs. Oh my goodness. That is all right. So I have a guess for this, but I wanted to ask you this. I was raised that it's impolite to ask people how old they are. And you told me how old you were when this happened, and I could do the math. But tell us roughly how long ago this was, because it's not a fresh story. You're telling the story from some time ago.
It's been 26 years, but it still brings tears to your eyes and chokes you up, you know. And
Yeah.
yeah, the kids are in their late 30s now and want nothing to do with me, and I understand that was from the ex-wife, but that's just the way it is.
All right. So that's all right. So, but it's been quite some time. Everybody knows that grief is hard. And you mentioned that it's still hard today. Like, and it's something we talk about all the time. But knowing that grief is hard, you were pretty young when you went through this. I don't know how much experience with direct grief you had. Knowing that it's hard, like we know that from when we're little kids, it's in movies and TV shows and books, and it's very dramatic, and people tell us all the time. That's not the same as actually living through it. Are you ready to talk a little bit about what it was like to actually go through it for you?
Sure.
All right, we'll go gently. We'll go gently.
Yeah.
You can start getting emotional. We'll go gently. I'm trying to move it back and forth, like heavy
No.
question, light question, so on and so forth.
You're good.
All right. So you shared with me when you pitched this that you lost the privilege of seeing his kids grow up. And so that's really specific wording. And so it caught me. I was like, that is very specific the way she said this. Were you surprised that that happened? Was it something that happened right away? Or or did they just drift off because he was no longer
No,
there to bring them
actually,
together?
when my husband and I started dating, even before I met his kids, he had told me if anything ever happens to me, you'll never see my kids again.
So just because of the relationship between him and his ex-wife. Were they geographically close? Were you guys close to them geographically, or was there some distance?
About an hour. But when we started dating, they were about 10 minutes apart.
Okay. And big town, small town, is it the town where you live now?
No, it was over by the Twin Cities in Minnesota.
Oh, so a pretty big city. So, all right. So that makes sense. So then, because if you were in a small town, and they live 10 minutes away, I would think that you'd have to work to not see them eventually. But this was a big city, big city. All right. So as soon as that happened, they stopped coming around, and you had been a part of their life for at least 4 years, probably a little longer with
Five,
dating.
yeah, over 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years. Was that hard?
It was very hard, but at the same time, I knew as a stepmom I didn't have any rights.
Yeah.
I also knew that no matter what I did, she wasn't going to let me see the kids. So I didn't fight for them like I probably would have had my husband not told me I'd never see him again.
Yeah. And you had a lot of other stuff going on. You had a lot of other stuff going on. All right. So, is it fair to say that this started a pretty dark period of your life?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So there's no rule about how old you're supposed to be when you're widowed, like at all. But I would say that you were pretty young when this
I
happened.
was 31.
Yeah, I think that's pretty. That feels young. And did you know anybody else who had lost a spouse at that time? Did you have any support with like friends or community like that?
No.
Yeah.
So, I went to a couple grief counseling things at a couple of the hospitals, but they were all older people that had been with their husbands or wives for 20 decades, and it's like I was like, that's not fair. You got that much more time than I got. And, I just couldn't relate. They didn't have young kids. They didn't lose their kids. They still had their, so I didn't know anybody that was like in my situation.
Yeah, because you lost, one of the ways to look at it is that you not only lost your husband, which is an enormous thing, and this that that's that primary relationship is tough because they're your friend too, they're your partner in life, that you live together, but you also lost your family, your Insta family. So it was a really dramatic change, even though it sounds like you and he had talked about it. Knowing something's going to be hard is not the same as experiencing the hard. So yeah,
And I
that's a
met
lot.
my husband like a month after I moved to the Twin Cities, so most of my friends were his friends, and they kind of quit coming around too because they didn't know what to say to you. Like they were all his friends beforehand, and they didn't want to upset me or anything, so I ended up kind of losing my whole circle, except for
Wow.
my family. My immediate family was about it.
And was your family there, or were you separated geographically from your family?
I had a brother that was 20 minutes away, and then a sister that was over an hour away, and then
Okay.
everybody else way farther. So,
So it's at least a little bit of family.
yeah, a little bit close. I could get there or whatever, and I one of the good things that came out of it is my oldest sister is 20 years older than I am, and I never really knew her growing up because she had moved away. And back in the 70s, you didn't call because it was so expensive
Right.
and all the stuff. So she actually came and stayed with me for a week, and we really started to develop a better relationship, and we're very close now. So that was one of the better things that came out of it, looking
That's
back.
actually a beautiful story that so you
Yeah.
had some family that knew and came to support you, and they maybe knew that you were a little isolated, and came and to be with you in this very unexpected time. Sounds like though, like during, and this was a couple decades ago, so communication was different. Like you highlighted, like long distance calls were different and things like that. So when you were going through, he was in the hospital, and you were home. That information flow would have been slow too, not as instant. So you would have been answering a landline, something is wrong.
Well, actually, we did have cell phones
You
were
had
just
cell
coming back
phones,
out
okay.
in so in 1998, they were just coming out. I did have one, didn't work half the time, depending on where you were, it didn't matter because I broke down right after that on Christmas Eve, and where I was, of course, it didn't work.
Didn't work.
So yeah, it was just kind of funny, but I was, once he went in the hospital, I was there pretty much the whole time. I
Okay,
would
so
go
you
home to take
stayed.
care of the cat, and sleep, but then I would go back. And then once he was in the hospital in the coma, we stayed there the whole time. We stayed upstairs in a room, so I didn't even leave.
All right, so you were so that so communication was instant because you were by his side. So it's the other way. It's the other way. So this happens. It's a very emotional process. You're going through the grief and the processing of the grief and living your life. I've done several interviews with people about the grief that comes after we lose people, different scenarios. There's some similarities with how people feel going through it, and also everybody handles it very, very differently. You say that you realized that you needed the courage to continue. Tell me a little bit about when you started to feel like your grief was not going the way you wanted to, and why you picked the word courage.
I think I really needed the courage to get out and meet people to and talk about what one talk about what happened, but also to make new friends because I really didn't have any anymore. There was a couple that I started hanging out with after the fact, and they really helped me. There was a gentleman, and at that time I had no clue. I'm pretty sure he was in love with me. I was at the point, it was only like 5, 6 months after he died, if that, when he would take me out and we'd just go out and eat and talk and whatever. And he helped me so much because he was just there for me, just kind of got me out of my head and just chit chatted and whatever. But I wasn't ready by any means. So
Yeah.
he helped me a lot. But then I worked with somebody that she just really makes me mad because we were really close friends beforehand. And I had kind of broken away before my husband died. But because him and I would go out, she would announce to everybody that we were sleeping together. And I'm just like, no, we're not. We're just
So a little bit of
friends.
workplace drama.
Yeah. And I was just like, and so another gentleman at the same office, his wife died. So him and I would go out and talk and have dinner so we didn't have to cook or whatever. And so then she said I was sleeping with him too. And I'm just like, I'm not sleeping with anybody. I'm sorry. I'm not even thinking about that because my brain ain't there, you
Yeah.
know? So being accused of being a slut or whatever, not that it, I'm like, whatever. I have been in the past, you know, we all have different stories, but it was very hurtful to be on top of. Just, I'm in grief, and she's accusing me of sleeping with people because I went out with them. I was like,
Yeah.
that's weird.
One of the things that goes with overwhelm, like grief is overwhelming. That's the way we feel. And one of the things that goes with overwhelm is the two things, right? One, we sometimes withdraw, like we pull back from the social parts of our life because we're exhausted and we can't do anything, right? And the other is the loneliness and the isolation. They happen at the same time, which is like a weird thing. Like, so it's like you feel very alone, you feel very isolated. In your case, this is grief of somebody who's a huge part of your social circle. And it's hard. So courage to get back out there and have social engagements. And then what I hear you sharing is that because this overlapped with a coworker, you feel like you were being penalized, socially penalized, because you were just looking for some companionship to not be alone, and people were drawing conclusions. That doesn't sound like it was tons of fun, to tell you the truth, Tina.
No, it was not tons of fun. I also had a boss that told me that I was, how did she, well, let me get the words. She said her kids were suffering because my husband died. And I
Oh.
was like, okay, I don't even know your kids. So what am I doing to your kids that they're suffering? And her kids were 18. One was a senior in high school and the other was 13. And I'm like, how are your kids suffering because my husband died? I'm not getting the connection. So it was a very tense workplace with my boss because she just didn't understand. Or, you know, I said, if I'm crying, please just tell me it's going to be okay. They'd just sit there. You don't have to say anything, but they'd see me and they'd turn around and walk away.
So yeah,
That
and
was.
so I think I'm hearing that like you were hoping that the connection at your like the support from your coworkers, that was a place where you were seeing other people, and it would have been really helpful if those folks had been more supportive. It comes up in every conversation I do about grief, the funny things that people say to us that are not supportive and often just sometimes land completely wrong. Things that people say, and that you know the somebody coming to you and saying that their children were feeling hurt from the death of your spouse, that might fall into that category of not sure where that came from.
I'm like, I don't even know your kids. I don't even think I had ever met her kids.
And had you did your husband work in the same office you did? Is that the connection?
No.
No, so there's no
No.
work connection. All right, very good.
No.
All
No.
right, so when you talk about the courage, it's like the courage to go on. It's the courage to live your life. That's one of the things you were talking about. And so we're talking about the social, like this is going to work. That's a big part of life. Socializing, making friends, that's a big part of life. You say that you realized that you deserved more than to be alive, but also to thrive. So did you, how, when did you begin to realize that? Like, do you remember? This is a long time ago, but grief is slow. So at what point do you think you realized, if you remember, that you wanted to do more than just exist?
Well, I'm thinking in two different contexts. So I also had open heart surgery when I was a baby.
Okay, yeah.
And I always heard you're lucky to be alive growing up. So I took that and owned it and said, you don't deserve, right? So you don't deserve happiness to thrive, to be abundant, to whatever. And didn't know that I incorporated that into my whole life. Who are you? You're alive. What more you shouldn't want? You're
Okay.
alive. So that, and then abandonment. Because of that open heart surgery, I was left at the hospital for 6 weeks because back in the 60s, parents did not stay, and we didn't know the trauma that that brought on to people after, psychologically. And so when my husband died, that brought back the abandonment issues
Yeah.
that I had. And I had other things in between there that had kept happening that I didn't know about yet, right? But your mind goes back because So it took me another, I think I was about 48 when I really realized, oh, I'm holding this you're lucky to be alive thing, and really go. But it was about a year and a half after my husband died that I was really starting to move on. I had met
Okay.
somebody else, and he knew my husband. It was a brother, my brother's friend. And then I was finally starting to say, okay. Because he showed interest and I felt okay with it by then, and I was like it would get me out of where I was, right? Because I ended up moving from the Twin Cities to Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and it just took me out of a whole depressing thing that I would relive all the time into
Okay.
being a fresh new start, really.
So there's a lot. Okay, so you did, yes. Yeah, so you had as a baby, you had open heart surgery, and that's one of those messages that people say with such a good intention. It sounds so sweet. You're lucky to be alive. Well, true, right? Better than the alternative, of course. But at the same time, it got turned around in the way you were living your life, in that all I should be grateful for is the alive part. I can't ask for any more. Okay. That's really interesting. Okay, so you already had that going into all of your adulthood and your relationships. You get married. It's a, you know, it's a heart disease and heart attacks that's a pretty common thing, but it is an interesting parallel in your life that then you lose your husband to a heart attack. And then he is going through a surgery and doesn't make it, is not as lucky. You go into grief, loneliness. About a year and a half, and you begin to come sort of back to the surface and rebuilding your basic life. You move and get away from, it sounds like pretty significant depression, great depression and grief. Okay. So you move, but it's another decade
that this is cycling through your mind before you finally say, "Hey, wait a minute. I deserve more than just breathing. I
Exactly.
deserve more than that." Okay, so thriving. Let's talk a little bit about as you're going through this. Then you're now in your fourth decade of life. I don't know if I did the math right there, but is that right? Okay.
Getting there.
Okay, so and then you begin to say, like, okay, so you begin to say, I want to thrive, not just live my life. What give us an idea of what you, in your opinion, in your mind, as you're working through this, what is the difference, some of the differences between living and thriving?
Thriving to me is enjoying life again and really enjoying what you do, doing what you love. So I love to work out. Most people are like, I hate working out, but I love to lift weights because I can feel the muscle. It makes me feel like I'm alive, right? In more
Okay.
than just one way. Enjoying golf, being with family, just having laughing. Oh my God, laughing is so much fun. So we did have a really funny story when we were in the hospital. Kurt's youngest, or Pete's youngest son, gave me a little football, and I carried it around, and I was pushing on my chest for an entire day. And when we went to bed that night, I was having chest pains, and with my open heart surgery, everybody's thinking, oh, heart attack for her too. So we go down to the ER because we're staying at the hospital. We go down to the ER and. My mom and I, neither of us put on a bra, and my other sister does, and she didn't really need one, but we always laugh about that. And so we're in this little curtained ER section, and I'm on the, they have me patched up, and they have a little oxygen thing. And, he's like, oh, your rhythm's funny. And I'm like, well, it would be. I had open heart surgery and blah, blah, blah. And they all left, and there was this lady in the next curtain room that had her bra sitting on the table, and my mom goes, Linda, grab that bra. And we started laughing, and we got the giggles, and we could not stop. And my sister was like, would you two shut up? And we were just laughing. And the doctor finally came in over about 15 minutes later, and we're still laughing. He's like, what is going on in here? And we didn't really tell him that part, but I'm like, you know what? We're all good. I'll be upstairs. If something happens, I'm in the hospital. I'll sign a release, whatever I got to do. But obviously, I'm fine. If I was having a heart attack, you guys all would have been here. So they
Yeah.
let me go. But it was just, we laughed so hard about that bra because my mom and I didn't have one on. And
And she told you to grab one.
here's this bra on the next table, and we were just giggling so
But
hard.
nobody took it. You didn't take a stranger's bra home.
No, we didn't take a
Okay.
stranger's bra, but we were laughing about it, and just could not stop laughing about it.
It is so. It was top of mind. You're concerned about your own health. You're at a state of agitation. That
Right.
if you're pushing on your chest, you don't die together. Oh, this might hurt because I was pushing on this. I was holding on to this
Yeah, I
toy
ended
all
up
day.
tearing. I pulled all the muscles that attach to the rib cage, so every time you breathe, it hurt.
Ah, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. All right. So it takes you about a year and a half to start going through the motions and get back to some of the basics of life. Then it takes another decade before you start doing the work of reclaiming the thriving. So
Yeah.
did you do any work specifically to pull yourself out of the grief? And I think of this not in terms of judging or going into details about what you're doing, but if there's anybody listening who's in a similar spot in their life, some of the things that you did that helped you get back to the daily life.
Gratitude journals. I did a lot of writing of gratitudes, like five a day, and then I did a lot of reading. I read all kinds of books. I can't remember what I read, but there was some grief books, but I also just read some fun books too as well,
Yeah.
just to, that were light, and because that would take my mind off of things, right? If I get into, that's why I listen to books all the time or listen to meditations, because I can shut my own mind off, and it just makes life. I'm not a big worrier, but at the same time, it's like if I know I don't have control over it, I can let it go. I don't think I was really good at asking God or anybody to help me at that time because I kind of felt like I was left behind. But I have gotten back into that now. It's like,
Okay.
yes, I know there's a bigger picture, and that there are things out there that can help us, and and God is part of that, and or universe or whatever you want to call it. You
Sure.
know, there's something out there that's bigger than us that really can help us along the way.
But that came later. At the in the
It
beginning,
did.
you were in the beginning. You were like, which I think, that's one of the themes that go many people go through. That's a very helpful point, right? Because even if you have a faith-based support network or a community around faith, sometimes in the heat of grief, in the like very beginning stages of grief, when you're really just focusing on get up and take a shower and go to the office. You're not ready to hear that message, and it can take some time to get back to it. I think that that might be helpful for people who are going through it, because it is definitely things that I've heard people say to me, where it's like, they want to share their message of faith at that time, and it's like, okay.
Yeah. And I
Not
think part of
ready.
it for me at that time, the weekend my husband went into the hospital on a Thursday. That weekend we were actually scheduled to join a church. We were going to go to the church and join it and whatever. And instead the next week we had his funeral there, right? And so when we were at the funeral, they have all these candles. And one particular candle went out. It was the second one from the top on the right. So he died the week before Thanksgiving. So this is the first year we never had Christmas at home in Upper Michigan. Everybody came to my house. And that was about the last time I seen the boys, because they did come over that week and or that night and whatever. So we went to church on Christmas Eve, and that same candle burnt out.
Wow.
I've not set foot back in that church again. I was too
There's a
freaked out.
lot of yeah, there's a lot of layers that you could go a lot of ways with that story, but I would absolutely be freaked out. When I was so much younger and I was going to a goal setting workshop. So this is, I don't want to give this too much mysticism or authority or anything. It's just a funny, ridiculous story. But so she was talking about being specific when you set your goals. And the example she actually gave, she's like, maybe you want to see a group of people. Like, I want to see my friends. She's like, well, be specific that you want to see them for a happy reason, because, something horrible could happen and that's why you see them, but that's not what you want to create for yourself. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, wow, okay, good point. I want to see everybody at a holiday barbecue. I see everybody at
Oh,
the
man.
awards ceremony, not at a funeral, because some were sad. Yes, exactly.
Right. Yeah. More
So,
people came to the Pete's funeral than did to our wedding.
oh, well, okay. Yes, that's a.
Well, his funeral was huge. I mean, we had a small wedding and it was meant to be small,
That's what I was thinking. I was like, you could have just,
but at the same time, a lot of people couldn't come to the wedding. Like my cousins, her daughter was just born, so she had a newborn. I think it was like 2 weeks old, and so I understood they couldn't come, but like the rest of the family didn't come, the other cousins, and so it was just like mostly his friends and then my immediate family and some coworkers that I knew. But at the funeral, there was people from his work, people from his school, because he was from there, so there are all kinds of people I didn't even know. And what was really funny is one of the my brother walked in and walked up to this older gentleman who was Pete's ex-wife's dad. My brother and him had known each other for years because they worked together at 3M.
That's fun. That's
And
fun.
we didn't know that we were somehow interconnected. It was,
Interconnected. All right.
yeah.
All right. So a decade after this, you begin to really do the mindset work on what's getting in the way of thriving, and you begin to lean into it, and find joy, working out, golf. What other things bring you are thriving for you?
I went back to bartending. So I was married at this time and I wasn't happy in my second marriage. And even the day I got married, my gut said, "Do you really want to do this?" And I didn't listen. We're good friends. We still talk to this day and we're friends. I love his girlfriend. I'm like, "You've never smiled at me the way you smile at her." It's just, but we are more like a brother sister type relationship, and his family finds it very strange that we still get along. My family has no problem with it because that's just how we are. And it's just, for me, it was just so much. I was in this relationship that I didn't really want to be in anymore. And how I put myself through college was bartending. And I said, you know what? I want to meet people. I want to bartend. And I started bartending. And that opened up so many things for me because it was like, oh, I don't have to be this stuffy corporate person anymore. I can have fun.
Okay.
I can give people crap and, just shoot the bull with people and have fun. And I can run my business that way. I don't have to have it be, oh, you got to do this and this and this and that. No, it's let's make it fun now.
All right. So a part of thriving sounds like that, everyday life can be enjoyable. It doesn't have to be, everything doesn't have to be rooted in just, step by step by step grueling
Right.
work. All
Yeah.
right.
No, you
Very
want to
good.
have fun. If it's not fun, why do it?
There you go. So this is a long journey. So we've talked about like this goes all the way back to when you were a baby, and then you have this very extreme experience when you're in your 30s. It actually takes about a decade to work through, but it takes you through that. Tell us, in a minute we're going to do the final fun questions, but tell us what you do. Tell us about what you do now. And you mentioned you have a business, and and I know you're a bartender, but tell us about your business that you do now, so that everybody knows what you do.
Yeah, so I own Excelling Your Business, created it from scratch. And what I just really found that I love is I'm really good at finding errors and fixing things. And I see when I come in and look at what you're doing, I can see it in my mind how it should be done differently to make it more efficient, more accurate. So I'm going to save you time, take away the stress of how you're doing things. It's like a lot of times, here's an example. I was working with a company that does medical testing. And so the hospitals would send in like 300, 400,000 line proposals. And they were hand matching the test names to the hospital name to their name. And when I was working with them, I said, I know there's a number for that test. He's like, yeah, but they don't give it to us. And I said, why don't you ask it from them? Because they have it, right? Because you have to have it to be bill insurance. And he just looked at me like, we can ask them for it? Like nobody had thought of that. This is a billion-dollar company that's been around for years, and they've been doing it this way. Nobody ever thought to do it a different way, right? So by getting that number, they took a process that took over 8 hours to do, depending on the size of that file, to was done in less than 2 minutes with an easy formula.
Wow. All right. And so you work with people within Excel. You specialize in working with people with it. That's why Excel is in the name of the company. All right. Very good. That is very cool. You have a special offer for the listeners, which is a program that you have, which is called Fortune in the Follow-Up. Normally you sell it for $333. You're special. It's on spec. You've got it on special for the audience at 222. Little bit of fancy numbers there. There's a link in the show notes, everybody. And of course, for everybody listening, the easiest way to get the links for any offers that come up in the show is to be a subscriber to Imperfect Adulting. And then I send it straight to your email box. Thank you very much, Tina, for that very generous offer. Are you ready for the final three questions?
I am.
All
Let's
right,
do it.
let's do it. Let's do it. Now, so I knew that you were a bartender because you and I have done some networking in the past. So the first question I want to ask you as a final fun question is, when you go into a bar these days, what's the thing that you order for yourself?
Well, if I'm not going to able to make my own drink, I usually just order beer because then I know exactly what's in it. I don't like being overpoured because that happens, and I know I have this. If I'm drinking hard alcohol when I'm out, I won't stop.
Okay.
So I just drink beer.
All right, so you won't let anybody else make you a cocktail. If you're going to have a cocktail, you're making it yourself. All right.
Exactly.
That's I get it. I get it. That's so good. I have it like there's other it's like when you go to someplace and you're not sure what the quality of things are. I'm like, "Okay, I'm going to pick something cold. I will have a diet soda. I will have a cold soda." Like it's like, "Don't give me anything complicated. Something that comes out of a bottle,
Cold. There we go. All right. So you mentioned that you like to listen to books. So I'm going to ask you, like, if you remember any of the recent books you've read that you would recommend to somebody else.
Oh boy. A fun one. And this is a whole series, and you don't have to listen to them in order. It's Janet Ivanovich, and Stephanie Plum is
I love those.
the
Yeah.
character. Oh my God, they're just so freaking funny. I love to listen to her, and usually I'll listen to it a couple times just because you miss something around but they're hilarious.
All right, so since you're so I love them too. That's one of the very like so I will when they are released, I will like pre-order those books. I've probably read or listened to all of them. Who's your favorite character? So this is a series of books that goes and it's got this bail bondsman named Stephanie Plum and she goes on adventures and it's full of crazy characters. I also love them. Who's your favorite character from like the series?
Oh, I'm gonna have to say. Now I can't come up with it. I want to say Ranger. Is that his
Okay,
name?
Ranger. Yeah, no,
Yeah,
Ranger's. Yeah,
it's
Ranger's
like
the guy all
because
in
yeah,
black.
he's the dark, mysterious, handsome guy. You
Right,
know,
right.
little not does things a little behind the scenes that maybe he shouldn't, but at the same time, he's always it's always in for the right reason.
I'm a big fan of Grandma, like her grandma.
Yeah,
That's
Graham's
such a
hilarious.
good character. And then also Lula.
Yeah,
Those are
Lula's
my, I
amazing
was totally in
character.
my, I was like, go for Lulu, go for Lula. All right,
I do like
very.
Lula though, because she's always fun and just a character that is memorable. You know,
Yeah,
you can see
exactly.
when she because she always talks about her outfits and her hair, and it's just like you can just picture it. And you're just like, oh God, no, don't bend over.
Oh my goodness. Yes. No, that's a whole theme in the descriptions of yes. People who have not read these books are like, what are they talking about? It's one of my favorite series. It's one of those things where she does it. This is these are this numbers are in the title. So she's numbering them. So like it's like Lucky 22 and the next one comes out. They've been out
Yeah.
for years. I've been reading them for years and they will sometimes make me just chuckle out loud. And it's an easy read, exactly like what you're talking to. If you're stressed out and you pull one of these, it does not take a lot of brain power to read these books.
Right.
Really, really just adventures. So absolutely. All right. So off the topic of book reviews, but I do love them. Great recommendation. When you take vacations, when you like to take vacations, do you like to travel a long way away from home to go to like an exotic, faraway location? Or are you a person who sticks to your nearby stomping grounds?
Oh, I like to travel everywhere. So I enjoy traveling near and far. I guess the thing that I don't like to do is have everything planned out because I want to be able to talk to the locals.
Okay.
They're going to have secret places to go that other people don't typically go, or just I want to get a flavor of what it's really like to live there, not just the tourist areas.
So
So
wherever you go, you're looking for the local scene.
exactly, because
Yes.
they're gonna know what's your favorite bar? It's not gonna be the tourist bar. It's gonna be some little ho-dink bar that you're gonna go in and just meet the characters that live there, just like in the movie books or in the books. You know, it's just like let's meet the real people of the area,
100%.
I always think that's fun.
That's
And
good.
so, yeah, I love to plan a little bit, but you gotta have room for impromptu and in spontaneous stuff because that's the whole point of a trip to me.
I love it. There's a story. I always throw one of my kids under the bus with this story because we were traveling somewhere and we'd been there several days. And my kid came to me and he's like, why are we in all the touristy spots? And I live in Miami, which is a tourist place, but like I'm a local here. So we only go to the tourist places when on purpose,
Always in
right?
town, yeah.
And, or if people are there, we're like always taking our local shortcut. But he's like, why are we going to the touristy places? And I was like, I hate to spoil this for you, but we are a tourist here. I don't know where the local places are. The reason I'm taking you to the tourist places is because we are on vacation. We are the tourist in this situation. And he's like, oh, okay.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah,
I
he
mean,
was.
I've not even been to some of the things up home where I grew up. You know, there's tourist areas that I'm like, I've never been there. We gotta go
Yeah.
there. So now I gotta go back home to go there.
Ah, there you go. Well, that's it, Tina Palmgren. Thank you so much for being an amazing guest today on the show.
Oh, thank you, Amy. I enjoyed it so much. Thank you.
thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obviously, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.